So please welcome Michael Kaplan.
The one time that my family, my mother and my father and my two sisters and myself, really roughed it and grappled with the elements was never. My parents, I guess they were spiritual cousins of Beth Marshall. They were part of that generational demographic. They were urban, middle class, aspirational Jewish professionals who felt that the only reason to spend a night in a tent was if you were a Boy Scout or a soldier, or you were wandering the wilderness for 40 years looking for the promised land. And when we moved from New York to California, you know, they took note of the fact that all of these awesome national parks and state parks were within reach and immediately made motel reservations. And so for many summers in a row, that's what we did. The five of us in a car, my older sister and my younger sister and myself and my parents, not one of us a born naturalist. We were all nature tourists. And it was flashing forward years and years later that my wife, who had been a Girl Scout and was adept in the natural world, just coaxed me into getting over my fear and dealing with the stigma of camping. And suddenly I got to have that experience of actually being in nature and letting it permeate in all sorts of ways, some of them very subtle. And you sleep near a creek, and that sound of running water is just massaging your brain. And you wake up in the morning and that stillness that cradles you. But nature tourists wake up and they watch cartoons. And then we would go out for breakfast. And then we would drive to the park and buy our ticket to get in. And we'd go to the first vista point and walk out that trail. And then, you know, there would be the Grand Canyon, or there would be Half Dome. And at that point, you know, that a profound thought would take hold, which was, when is it okay to go back to the car? You know, because you're there in front of the magnificence of Half Dome, and Half Dome is not going to blink. You're going to have to decide when you're going to turn your back. And, you know, my parents did have that sense that 5 minutes is a little shallow. And you know, so we would kind of fill the time, and we would read every informational plaque, and we would take some pictures. And, you know, my sisters and I would start to get very impatient. I mean, at that age, I was obsessed with show business. And other than the occasional nightly ranger talk about bats, my needs weren't being met. So I couldn't wait to get back to the motel and start reading my history of the Marx Brothers. But, you know, we would be there just filling the time until my father would finally say, well, let's get lunch. And so that was my experience, that nature was what happened between patty melts. So eventually we kind of widened the map. And we went to see Bryce and Zion, and then we went to the Grand Tetons. And that summer, I became really obsessed with fishing. And this wasn't my river runs through it kind of moment. This was sort of how I was meeting nature halfway, which meant that it was more about me than nature, you know, that I could maybe have some sort of personal triumph and win the nature game. I wasn't going to be able to climb a mountain or do anything death-defying, but if I could catch a trout, you know, that would be really satisfying. And so I bugged my father, and eventually we went to some little store, and he bought me a $10 fishing pole and a little tackle box and some bait. And then every day I would get him to stop, and we'd all go out by a stream or a river, and I would try and fish. And I was pretty hopeless at it, and my older sister and my mother thought it was hysterical. They laughed at me the entire time as I'd catch my hook on the rocks behind me or on my own clothes, and I was this great comic relief for them. And I was getting very, very frustrated, and again, the obsession was growing to the point where the only recorded instance of my sleepwalking was on this particular vacation. We were renting a house, and according to my father, at 2 o'clock in the morning, he heard some banging around, and there I was standing in the kitchen. And he said, Mike, come on, you want to go back to bed? And I said, fishing, I got to go fishing. So it was deep in there. And when he saw that, he took pity on me. And one day he stopped, he took me to a trout pond. One of those little man-made ponds filled with starving fish. And I baited my hook and cast it in, and 6 seconds of wild thrashing, and I pull out the first trout that got to eat my bait. And it made me feel kind of dirty, like Dad had taken me to a trout whorehouse. It didn't feel right. And so I wasn't in that victorious frame of mind, and my father then announced, let's get lunch. And this time we got some sandwiches, and we went and we ate by a river, and I was just kind of mindlessly casting in, and suddenly there was a yank and a thrashing, and I pulled out a bona fide free range trout. And the first thing that I did, I'm not proud of this, was that I pretty much shook it in my mother's face and my older sister's face, because I was just going to shut them up. And what I wasn't revealing was that the trout hadn't swallowed my bait and gotten the hook in its mouth. The hook was like in the side of its body. Like it hadn't really seen where it was going. Maybe it was texting. And nonetheless, I just, as the kid who had been out there, just, vaguely aware of nature, I just considered this, a great triumph in the wilderness. And we went back to the house with two fish, and my mother, who had never cooked a trout in her life, chose to fillet it beforehand so that everybody got a piece of fish about the size of a stick of gum. And I, when I think about this summer, it wasn't the summer that I roughed it or really at that point became attuned to nature, but it was the summer when the boy who was vaguely aware caught the fish that wasn't paying attention.